Shalom. We're in the Piska Tetvav of Rav Kook's commentary on the second chapter of Masechet Shabbat on the Agadata. That's paragraph 15. And a very interesting topic tonight about the relationship between Kiddusha and Mitzvot, between the commandments and holiness. Amar Yehuda, Amar Ravasi, Amarav, Asur Lahartzot Ma'ot Keneganer Chanukah. If you remember, we've been discussing the laws of Chanukah. And the Gemara says that you're not allowed to count your money, to check your money, by the Chanukah candles. Right? We all know that we sing after lighting Ve'en lan reshut lishtamesh bahem ela lirotam bilfad, that you're not allowed to benefit from the Chanukah candles. And this is the source. Ki amrita kamei de Shmuel, when this was said before Shmuel, amar li v'chiner kedusha yesh ba. Shmuel said, what's the problem with counting money by Nerot Chanukah? That would infer that the Chanukah candles have holiness. And we know that that's not the case. There are very, very few things that have holiness. And that's exactly what we're going to talk about. What exactly are commandments and what exactly is holiness? I'll just say in a nutshell before we get into Rav Kook's explanation, Kiddusha, also holiness isn't such a good translation, but just for translation's sake, holiness, a Sefer Torah has holiness, Tefillin, a Mezuzah, the land of Israel, Shabbat. There are things which have intrinsic holiness that a person could buy a pair of tefillin and never put them on, but they are holy. As opposed to that, tzitzit, the strings of a tzitzit, you don't put them in the geniza. When tzitzit, they're torn, right? Or you can't use them anymore. As a matter of fact, you're not allowed to put them in the geniza. And that's one of the things we're going to talk about, because you're not allowed to confuse different levels of holiness. If you put something which doesn't belong in the geniza, geniza is, how would you translate that?
Burial.
The burial. If you put something that doesn't belong in the burial, then you're turning it into a garbage bin. And you're ruining it for the things which really do need that high level of to relate to them in Kiddushah. Right? You can't bury tzitzit and tefillin together. Right? That's so Shmuel is asking, since when do mitzvot have holiness? Why does the halakha that you're not allowed to check your money or to benefit from the light of the Chanukah candles? Okay. Matkif la Rav Yosef. And Rav Yosef asks a similar question. Kidam kedusha v'chidam kedusha yesh bo? Since when is blood holy? And we have mitzvot regarding blood. D'tanya, as we learn in the Braita, v'shafach v'chisa b'meshe shafach yechaseh. That when you slaughter a chicken or a chaya, a wild animal, you don't have to do this by behemot, by cultured, by cattle. But if you shecht a deer, or more common is chicken, fowl, you have to cover their blood. Shelo yichasenu beregel, but how do you cover it? We learn from the pasuk v'shafach v'chisa that you pour the blood and you cover the blood. How do you pour the blood? It's talking about slaughtering. With the hand that you slaughter, that's the hand that you have to take the sand or the dirt and cover the blood. Anybody who's ever been in a schlachthaus, in a slaughterhouse, knows that when you're slaughtering fowl, they always have this sand ready to cover the blood. Shelo yichasenu beregel, but you have to do it with your hand. You're not allowed to kick the sand onto the blood to cover it with your foot. To move the sand with your foot. Shelo yu mitzvot bezuyot alav. That mitzvot should not be disgusting, unrespectable. Right? Since when? If something is respectable, if you, something is important to you, I don't know, a picture of your mother, you don't kick it around with your foot.
Can you use a shovel, or do you have to do it with your hand itself?
I think you can use a shovel, but it has to be done with the hand. The main thing is not with the foot. Hachinami, shelo yube, bofen klali, utensils are called yada arichta. It's like a long hand. Hachinami, so too, shelo yu mitzvot bezuyot alav. That also regarding, this is the reason why, regarding the mitzvah of Hanukkah candles, you're not allowed to benefit and use them for counting your money or any other menial or disrespectful act. They're not holiness, but we have to respect them. Okay? Rav Kook explains as follows. Hevdil shebein mitzvah lekdusha, talui beze shematarat hakdusha, hi lashrish ba'adam et haromemut ve'akavod shera'ui lo sheyishaer b'ribo b'chol davar anogea lichvodo shel makom baruch hu. When we talk about holiness, holiness is directly connected to God or godliness. And that's different from the mitzvot. The direction that Rav Kook is going to go, I'll say it already from the beginning, is that mitzvot are a means, kiddusha is the goal. And you're not allowed to confuse the two. Okay, both are important. But a lot of things are important in the world. And just like we say sometimes in Havdalah between Yom Tov and Shabbat, Lavdil ben Kodesh leKodesh. Right? Even within holiness, there are different levels of holiness, and you're not allowed to confuse them. Again, Hevdel shebein mitzvah leKedusha, the difference between holiness and commandments, talui bezeh shematarat haKedusha, what is the goal of holiness? We'll start with that. The goal is lahashrish ba'adam, to establish, to enroot in a person, et haromemut v'kavod shera'ui lo sheyisha'er b'libo, the honor, the exaltedness that a person, according to the extent of godliness that he has in his heart, he is identified with that holiness. B'chol davar anogea lichvodo shel makom baruch hu. Anything that has to deal with godliness, a Jewish person has kiddusha inside their neshama. Right? It's built in. And even if a person never did a mitzvah in his life, he has the potential which is just waiting to be realized. A good example is kiddushat Shabbat. Kiddushat Shabbat is even if a person never accepted Shabbat, as soon as it's sunset Friday afternoon, Shabbat comes in whether you like it or not. Whether you accept it or not, whether you like it or not, this seventh day is holy. Same thing with the land of Israel. The land of Israel cannot lose its holiness. Obviously, the more Jews there are here, that adds Kedusha, because Jews are holy, the land is holy. The more Jews that there are here, eventually when all the Jews are in the land of Israel, or most of them, won't get into the details, then that raises the level of Trumot Masrot, the Mitzvot Tatliot Ba'aretz, because there's that much more holiness being realized, the holiness of the people and the holiness of the land. But even if theoretically there were no Jews in the land of Israel, or say all the Jews in the land of Israel, Chas V'Shalom, were not religious, the land is 100% holy. You can't, the land can vomit out somebody who isn't holy enough, but the land is, holiness isn't something that you can degrade. It is godly. The same thing with tefillin, like we started saying before. Even if a sofer wrote tefillin and nobody ever used them, they are holy. A mezuzah is holy. A sefer Torah, even if it's never been read, is holy. It is essential holiness. Okay? Now, the more a person is in touch with his holy, with this holiness, or maybe it's Rav Kook is connecting it directly with godliness, the more he's connected with his godliness, he is connected with the end in and to itself. Limante chakek bilvavo haemeta na'ala Shehud ha'adam, the high exalted level of a person, he has a neshama, he has a spark of God, he is holy, right? Elokai neshama shenatata bi tehorahi. V'tiferet nishmato hi ne'erechet be'ota mida shekvod Hashem hu musag mishuar b'nafsho pnima. To the extent, by the way, this is in Slabodka, which was the classic yeshiva of Musar, the Saba of Slabodka, the altar, what he used to stress was this Hud Ha'adam, what Rav Kook calls, the greatness of man. And that's why in Slabodka, for example, in the Chevron Yeshiva, which is the Eretz Yisrael branch of Slabodka, they dress meticulously. Even ad kedei kach, they're not allowed to grow beards there until you're married, because a beard is considered sort of schlumpy, or maybe, and that's the idea of wearing jackets and ties and wearing a hat. That's they didn't dress that way in the yeshiva world in the 19th century, but that was considered modern, meticulous, and if you treat yourself respectfully.
And in the chadarochel, they don't pick up their own dishes. The help do it.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I never heard that. The idea is that if a person dresses respectfully and acts respectfully, he will respect himself. He will realize that he is this godliness in him. And that's what Kedusha is about. Uba'asher zohi ha-tachlit ha-achrona. This godliness, this holiness, is the goal. Right? It's very important. Very often you'll hear a darshanim or rabbis talk about what is the goal of Judaism, and you'll hear so many different answers, all of which are really correct. But is there one goal which summarizes all of those goals together? The answer is holiness, kedusha. Especially when you understand that kedusha is godliness. Okay? So this is the goal. To say that godliness or holiness is a means, is a medium to achieve something else. You know, what if we're talking about something which is so high, it degrades them, it's dishonorable to say it's a means for something else. No. The Jewish people are a means unto themselves. Shabbat is a mean unto itself. Eretz Yisrael is a mean unto itself. It's an end, I'm sorry. All of these are ends unto themselves. They are not means. And we spoke about this once in Orot Eretz Yisrael, where in the first piska, Rav Kook stresses that Eretz Yisrael, just one of the examples, is not a means to solve the problem of anti-Semitism, like Herzl thought. And it's not a means to become more religious, like Rav Shimshon Rafael Hirsch thought. But even if the land is totally desert, and there's not one Jew here, and theoretically maybe it's even more easier to be religious in Chutz La'aretz, Chazal tell us it's better to live in a city of idolaters in Eretz Yisrael rather than a city of Jewish tzaddikim in Muncie. Why? What's the point? Exactly this. Eretz Yisrael is not a means. It is an end unto itself. Rav Kook there gives the example of a kesher chayim, right? When you have a living bond with your wife, even if she gets older and isn't as beautiful as she used to be, it's the same bond, right? It's ahava she'inat tluya b'davar. Okay, and we've spoken about this several times.
But secular people have serious problem with both Kedushat Eretz Yisrael and Kedushat Am Yisrael. People wanting to give land for peace and all that is one thing, but also people are always there. Every once in a while, there's a big fuss about some Druze soldier who dies in battle, mm-hmm. and why can't he be buried next to his Jewish comrades?
Right, the idea of Segulat Yisrael, of Jews having a different neshama, or Eretz Yisrael being intrinsically, inherently different, are concepts which you have to learn about. But our topic is what is that Kedusha? And it's another way of saying godliness, and that is the end, not the means. Okay? She'en lomar alea she emtza'i leze tachlit acheret. Al kena na'ahi asura bechol davar kadosh. Rav Kook explains beautifully. That's why regarding holy things, you're not allowed to use them for anything secular. You can't use your tefillin as a paperweight. You can't use the Sefer Torah to lean on. Why? Because they are not means. It's a beautiful explanation. The whole point is, remember what is the end. What is the goal in life? The goal is holiness. The goal is Kedusha. The goal is godliness. Don't lean on it. Don't use it as a paperweight. That's regarding Kedusha. Limandat ki lo ha-hana'a ha-pratit. Vamshachat is a tov acher, hi tachlit ha-kedusha. Don't make the mistake in thinking that the goal of Kedusha is to get to the world to come. Right? That this whole world, even Kedusha in this world, is just a means to get to the real world and the world to come. Because that's a mistake. Physical Kedusha in this world, which by definition Kedusha is something that is connected with the physical. That's the difference from Tahara that we spoke about at Linz. The Ramchal in the last perek, the last chapter of Mesilat Yesharim, stresses that when climbing the ladder of Midot, you start out with Zehirut, carefulness, Zrizut, to be energetic, enthusiastic. And then you got, I don't remember the exact order, Chasidut, Tahara, Nikiyut before that. The highest level is Kedusha. Asks the Ramchal, he defines, what is the difference between holiness, Kedusha, and Tahara, which is a lower level, usually translated as purity. He says, holiness is something where it's physical, but it's godly. And that you reveal the godliness even in the physical. And again, the Jewish nation, we're physical people. We sleep and eat and, have to go to the bathroom just like everyone else. On the other hand, we are holy. The land of Israel also. There are some places which are hotter, some which are colder. Sometimes it's more fruitful. Sometimes when we're in exile, it's deserted, right? Sometimes, but it does make a difference. You don't measure the fruit of Eretz Yisrael in kilo. You don't measure holiness in kilo. Holiness is something inherent, which is has a physical aspect to it, like tefillin, like a Sefer Torah. It is physical. But don't make the mistake in thinking that that physical is a means for the world to come. No, godliness is an end. And as a matter of fact, and we spoke about this once, the final destination is Tchiyat HaMetim, which is back in this world. In other words, even after a person dies and his soul goes to the Olam HaNeshamot, to heaven, which is without a body, and undergoes perfection there, until all of the neshamot, all the souls, get to a high enough level to come back to the physical world. And that is what's called the revival of the dead. So that, don't make the mistake in thinking that holiness is a means under no circumstances. Holiness is an end. Even though, again, it's hard to understand. It's hard to believe that something physical could be holy.
You can't see the you can't detect the difference. What bothers people is I can't detect the difference in the quality of an excellent university lecture on nuclear physics, as opposed to a mediocre Shiur Torah,
right,
or a brilliant, wonderful non-Jew, right, as opposed to a Jewish guy who's a jerk.
Hey, let me give you even a simpler example. Lashon HaKodesh. You could tell the same joke in English, and you tell the same joke in Hebrew, and in Hebrew it is a holy joke. And I think we had a shiur about that a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
We brought all the sources. Anybody who wants to see it, you can just Google Ari Shvat Lashon HaKodesh. I think somebody might have translated that to English also. Well, that would be an oxymoron. But, okay, anyway, you can find the sources where you could even make a shavua. You could take an oath in a Beit Din on this box of candies because it's written in Hebrew, right? Okay, so kol echad ki'im etzem rishum hoda kedusha benefesh hu atzman hatachlit hayoter nizgava. By the way, notice, for those who are who want to middayek, there's a famous question in the Ramchal, Misilat Yesharim. As we mentioned before, the book is built on the Braita of climbing the different levels of improvement. And it's based on a Braita, I believe, in Masechet Avodah Zarah. And there are two different girsaot there in the Braita. What is the highest level? In one of the girsaot, in one of the editions, it's written the highest level is Tahara. The Ramchal writes, he goes according to the highest edition, is Kedusha. Based on what we explained before, the Kedusha, Sukkot, for example, is on a higher level than Yom Kippur. Right, because it has the physical aspect. And the Ramchal and Rav Kook, as a Kabbalist and as a very staunch follower of the Ramchal, is going in the footsteps of the Ramchal. Kedusha is the highest level that man can attain.
Was this the mistake of the Meraglim?
Oh, yeah, exactly. That was the mistake of the Meraglim, where they thought that you could be even more spiritual, learning Torah all day in the desert, rather than coming into the land of Israel, where we'll have to work the land and serve in the army, etc., etc. Exactly.
And the justification of Benot Zlafchad was that our father died because he was imperfect.
Yeah,
I got everybody's imperfect. That whole generation died. So why should we be singled out to not have a piece of the land just because of those two things of a father dying and being girls?
Okay, shegadol umikol tuv shenuchal litzayer, umikol hana'a shenuchal lidamot. Holiness, kedusha, godliness, even in this world, is a higher level than anything that we can imagine. Right? Even something above the physical. We can't fathom what that goal is. And again, that's why you can't use it for anything else. Here's the other side of the coin. Hamitzvot. What about the mitzvot? What about the commandments? The Gemara is telling us that the mitzvot don't have kedusha. Tzitzit doesn't have holiness. Does not inherit holiness in the money that you gave to tzedakah.
Lo nitnu mitzvot elo letzarif behen et abriyot. There are means to it. That's means to an end statement.
Oh, so that's where Rav Kook is going. Hamitzvot omnam hen etzot elyonot. Machshirot et ha'adam bichlalo ubifratav litachlito hana'ala. How do you get to Kiddushah? How do you get to holiness? How do you realize your potential? That's through the mitzvot. The mitzvot are explicitly means. They are not the end. They are the means.
But they're part of Torah, which is the end. So how do you work that
out? So that's what we're going to talk about. Okay. Yoshua mentions that the Torah is made up of many mitzvot. So what's the relationship between the two? By the way, this term that the etzot, the mitzvot are called etzot, everyone says it in the name of the Zohar. And Rav Filber, very nicely, in the footnote here, points out that the Rambam, who is usually considered Mr. Rational and doesn't talk about mysticism, he uses the same term. In other words, whether you're a Kabbalist or you're a Nigla person, a rationalist, the Rambam at the very end of Sefer HaKorbanot, the book of the sacrifices, in Elchot Tmura, anybody who's learned Mishnah Torah knows that very often at the end of most of the 14 books of the Arach HaZakah, the Rambam usually finishes off with a Dvar Agarita, with a nice idea, rather than the halachic statement.
I caught all of them, but you
can check it out for a homework. I remember noticing
only
once.
14, it shouldn't be that hard.
Okay, so you can do it now. Go into the library and check it out. I think I remember noticing that at least a couple don't have it. So that's why I mentioned it.
Okay.
So the Rambam here at the end of Hilchot Tmura reads as follows. And he's talking about korbanot, the idea of sacrifices. And a lot of people talk about, you know, is modern man going to go back to giving sacrifices? And we spoke about once how even Rav Kook himself, in several places, infers that maybe there won't be animal sacrifices in the third Beit HaMikdash. And everybody knows the famous Rambam in the Guide for the Perplexed, where he says that sacrifices was the way of serving a God in every religion. And just like it's unthinkable today to have a religion without a building, whether it be a church, a mosque, or a shul, a synagogue, so too, at the time the Torah was given, you couldn't think of serving in a religion without giving sacrifices. Now, according to that, somebody could take the rational extension that, well, maybe today that religions don't give sacrifices, maybe there won't be sacrifices in the third Beit HaMikdash. It's a famous question. And again, Rav Kook deals with it. He says, maybe yes, maybe no, but don't make the mistake. The Rambam definitely believes that there is going to be sacrifices, animal sacrifices, in the third Beit HaMikdash. I think Yeshaya, Professor Leibovich, says that the Rambam, he doesn't believe in sacrifices, and based on the Mor Nevuchim, the Guy for the Perplexed that I quoted before, but the Rambam explicitly says in several places in Hilchot Malachim, and in Sefer Korbanot, and in Sefer Avodah, that yes, there will be sacrifices in the third Beit HaMikdash.
Yaakov Emden claimed that the Rambam didn't write the Mor Nevuchim. It must have been that Apikoros philosopher Maimonides.
It's not even worth putting on the tape. Okay, the ein marimin afalpi shekol chukei haTorah gezerot, says the Rambam. Even you don't have it inside the books. Even though all of the mitzvot of the Torah are decrees, k'moshe biyarnu besof mi'ilah, as the Rambam explained at the end of Sefer Mi'ilah, decrees that we don't understand. Ra'ui, nevertheless, it's worthy, it's proper, ra'ui litbonen bahem, to examine them, to analyze them. V'chol ma she'ata yachol liten lo tam, ten lo tam. There's a famous quote. Anything that you can give a reason, a tam literally means a taste. In other words, anything that you can do to make the mitzvot more logical, more tasty, more appealing, then do it. Okay? And then I'm skipping down to the end. Lefichach satama katu bifanav shelo yachlif uknaso im hichlif ve'amar vayahu tmurato yekodesh. The Rambam gives a suggestion why you're not allowed to switch one animal for another. V'chol eilu advarim kedei lakuf et yitzro ulataken deotav. The reason for all these mitzvot is for a person to overcome his yetzer. It's talking there about that you made a neder to give a certain animal as a sacrifice and then you change your mind. Right? The Rambam is saying, overcome that selfish desire, ulitaken deotav, and to improve your midot, your character traits. Virov dinei Torah. Here's the punchline. Most of the laws of the Torah, einam ela etzot mirachok, they are advice. The mitzvot are good ideas. It's a good idea to follow the mitzvot.
What does he mean, mirachok?
Etzot mirachok is a pasuk, I think, in Yeshayahu, where the Rambam was quoting it, but the idea is that, yes, it is advice, but it's a heavenly advice. There's a difference between, you know, sometimes, it's funny, anybody who has teenage kids knows that, you know, teenagers are learning how the world runs, and they have a lot of questions, and they're curious, and they're cynical, and but one thing that's good about teenagers, they talk with their friends for advice, on condition that their friend isn't above the age of 20. But they're not into experience. Anybody who has experience, they're not willing to ask. They like advice, but close advice, right? Somebody who's, on the other hand, if you could get advice from God, right? Somebody who knows it all and really not only has all the experience, has all the know-how of everything, his advice is always going to be what's called in Sefer Dvarim very often, "Amitzvot asher anochi mitzaveh etchem litov lach."
not only
for your betterment, for your betterment. In other words, that when a person observes Shabbat, it's a good idea. Even though he might be worried that he's going to be making less money, no. In the end, maybe you might be making less money, but it's in your betterment. Who says that money is the only thing? Right? Very often students ask about staying in Israel. And the answer is, staying in Israel is a good idea. How do I know? Because it says in the Torah. Right? And anything which is written in the Torah is a good idea, but not just a good idea, like your 18-year-old friend or your 50-year-old friend is going to tell you, but it's etzot mirachok, somebody who has a bird's eye view and knows the past, the future, knows all the reasons, all
and
the logic.
It also has no interest, self-interest, no action.
Right, that's another important point. Right, that God is above everything. He doesn't have an interest. He doesn't have an agenda. He's objective. Migdol ha'etza. Okay, I think that's also a pasuk. Gedol heitzah v'rav alila, right? That God is the advisor. And that's a very interesting point that the Rambam and Rav Kook is stressing. That a lot of time we think of God as our king, and sometimes we think of him as our father, but he's also our advisor. He gives good advice.
And in this time when we don't have the experience of king, and all too many of us don't have much experience of a father either, the advisor thing really comes to the fore.
That's an interesting point.
And from an educational point of view, you have to work from that more.
Right? Yoshua says an interesting point, that today where there are no kings, and also unfortunately fathers very often are out of the picture, or don't know how to be fathers, so maybe this job of advisor, looking at God as the advisor, is that much more important. L'takin ha'deot u'liyasher kol ha'ma'asim. In order to straighten all of our actions and all of our traits. So again, mitzvot are definitely means. They are a median. Don't confuse it with kedusha, which is the goal. And the means, okay, let's go on. Hamitzvot omnam hen etzot elyonot machshirot et ha'adam bichlalo ubifratav l'tachlito ha'na'ala. The mitzvot prepare a person, create a person, educate him on the whole, in the details, for his lofty goal. Again, what is his lofty goal? Godliness, holiness. Lahakshir nishmato, to prepare his soul. Again, the soul is godly, the soul is holy, but you need mitzvot to prepare it. Kuchutav umidotav, el hatuv hanizgav shuatid lasigo bacharit hashlamato. Again, the mitzvot are a means. By the way, we may have spoken about it once, there's a famous machloket in Masechet Nidah, whether mitzvot atidot lidbatel or not. There's also machloka, whether that's talking about Yemot Mashiach, whether it's talking about Tchiyat HaMetim, whether somewhere along the line we won't need mitzvot. And Rav Kook deals with this issue in many, many different places, and he takes the Kabbalistic approach that being that the mitzvot are etzot, and again it's also rational like we saw in the Rambam, but he takes this approach that being that the mitzvot are advice, sound advice, somewhere along the line it might be mitzvot atidot lidbatel. If we achieve the end without the means, then we won't need the means. For example, Rav Kook, when he talks about the mitzvah of limud Torah, I had the schut of publishing this letter that isn't found in any of Rav Kook's books, where he writes to his daughters about the importance of learning Torah. So first, he talks about the importance of learning Torah for men. And we all know Talmud Torah keneged kulam. Rav Kook points out, Avraham Avinu didn't need to sit and study Gemara. And neither did Yehoshua. Maybe Yehoshua learned Tanakh. But he definitely didn't learn Gemara. Nope. There was the Torah Sheba'al Peh. But Avraham Avinu, what is the idea when Chazal say that Avraham Avinu got the mitzvot from his klayot, from his, kidneys, he got it from within himself. He had that godliness, he developed that godliness, even without the mitzvot. And that's how Rav Kook goes on to say, that's why originally men in the time of Avraham Avinu didn't have to learn Torah all day. Because we fell, we need that, but women don't. Women don't have the obligation to learn Torah day and night. Why? Because they are closer to that higher spiritual godly level without needing the means of learning Torah. Rav Kook points out, unfortunately in the modern world, women have also fallen, and they're not their natural holy selves anymore. And that's why women today also have to learn Torah. They don't have to learn the same Torah as men. They don't have to learn as many years as men. They don't have the obligation of learning day and night as men. But they need it.
And the further
on the other hand, the mitzvot, aseh she'hazman grama, the positive mitzvot which are dependent on time, Rav Kook, just like Rav Shinshin Rafael Hirsch, I'm not sure whether he saw Rav Hirsch write it, but they both go in the same direction, that women are exempt from many mitzvot because they don't need them. Because they have that high, godly, altruistic midot, right? Look at the 13 attributes of God. They're feminine attributes. Hashem, Hashem, Kel Rachum, V'chanun, Erech Apayim, V'rav Chesed, patience, kindness, givingness, right? These are very feminine attributes. So Rav Kook explains that, again, if the mitzvot are a means to become godly, there may be a time where a person, a man or a woman, might not need these mitzvot. He can get to that high level of godliness even without a particular mitzvah. Now, obviously, Rav Kook answers to a Rav Alexandrov in one of his letters, who mistakenly inferred, does that mean that we don't need mitzvot in the modern world? Rav Kook said very clearly, no. We're not there yet. Definitely. Right, we're not even close.
So that's the right. Similar to the issue of vegetarianism.
Right, right.
But doesn't that mean that if the mitzvot, le'atid labo, if the mitzvot are batel, so that includes korbanot? No.
Yeah. Right, but the question is whether that's talking about Tchiyat HaMetim or in Yimot HaMashiach. Okay, we'll stand here and we'll continue next time.
At the very least.